Hey, Ben.
Hey, Jake.
We've got a little bit of a charitable theme about this episode. We've got very special guest Braden Shaw coming on a little bit later to discuss some amazing work he's doing in the charity space. And I've noticed that you've done the Big Freeze beanie there, which is etching on your melon.
Yeah, this year's Big Freeze, which I do like. I haven't worn it in a while, and I don't normally wear hats or beanies on the show. I just tend to have my hair, out and just doing whatever it's doing.
Flowing.
But flowing, yeah. Depending how long it is, it's flowing. But I've gone and made a bit of a blunder, Jake, because you know how not many people, actually no one would know, but we're looking at sort of a couple of redesigns for our podcast.
Rebrand.
Yep. Rebrand, just a bit, updated logo, maybe the two of us on there, that sort of thing. And we've outsourced some lovely ladies who actually give them a follow if you want as well, but Bell Design, they're really doing some really good things in that space. And they've asked us if we could send in, a couple selfies, just sort of game face sort of, they do seem a bit bizarre, but
it's already awkward, isn't it?
It's very awkward already. And then so they actually messaged me that last week, and I sort of forgotten about it. It's not important, we've been busy doing the show and that sort of thing, and then I've looked at the messages and gone, oh god, I forgot about all that. But it was already too late, because if we're gonna do selfies, I've gone and shaved my head, Jake.
No. I think it looks okay, but this is what you're going to be immortalised in cartoon as.
Well, that's what I mean. I don't mind the actual do itself, but if I just think it's a one-off and I'll grow it back, then what do I do? What do we do? Do we just crop it away?
I'm sure you've got older photos of yourself that they could base your hair on.
Oh, yeah, true. I just don't want to make their jobs even harder than it is. But
it's true, because if they have to make us, semi-attractive or, look good, then they've got their work cut out for them, I think.
I love how you're going semi-attractive to, look good.
Well, I mean, because it's not a dating profile, we don't need to, be attractive. We just want to be easily consumed in that sense. But, yeah, look, I think your haircut looks good. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they come up with and how the Magoo's rebrand sits with your new hard look.
Watch this space. The Magoo's. The Magoo's. The Magoo's. The Magoo's.
Keep doing the right thing, Ben.
Still good. Oh, I'm trying my hardest, mate. I'm trying.
Yeah, it certainly varies day to day, doesn't it?
It does.
Some days you think, right, this is it, we're going to do this forever and I'm up for it and this is life. And then other days you're like, my God, I cannot wait to get out of this hellhole and see my friends. But
What's the first thing you would do when they say you can go do whatever you like?
I think I'll just go and hang out with my mates probably, if they want to.
It does take two to tango.
Yeah. I just remember we had a couple of great days in between lockdowns, which when the restrictions eased, we'd get a small group, go to a mate's joint, watch some sport, have a few beers, and it was really nice. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. What about you?
Pretty much the same. Wouldn't mind you heading down to the coast. That'd be nice.
I probably should have said that, because that was the other lockdown or the other post-lockdown activity, was heading down to lovely Ocean Grove with Rach. Yep. But I didn't say that, so that's a shame.
Well, I can edit that first part out if you like, if we put this in.
I prefer it to be an accurate representation of myself, so I'll just cop that. But
but when you're able to see your partner during this time, that makes it a lot easier.
That's correct. Do you think that our partners will accept that when we go on, when we just hang out with our mates flat stick when lockdown's over, or do you think that there'll still be a...
You didn't say flat stick, so let's not try and dig this hole any deeper. But I think for one, Molly would accept that I would like to catch up with friends, absolutely, as would she. She probably can't wait more than me.
That's true.
Just would internalise it and probably not say it on a podcast. That's the difference between her and myself.
Well, this is our therapy, so
yeah, it actually
it's
is.
Not as if anyone else, it's not as if anyone else listens to it, so we so we might as well just talk about it here.
That's it.
Look, there is, even though there's footy all the time, and you know there's always new news, Ben. There's always new things to talk about, and one of the things I want to talk about to you is the AFL Grand Final.
Yes,
it's been confirmed today, Brisbane.
Yeah, today.
The Gabba night, Cox Plate during the day. Huge day. Thank you day is going to be the public holiday on the Friday beforehand. That's what they're calling it. Thank you day. For all Victorians.
No.
So hopefully we're allowed to be out and about by then, but jury is obviously still out. And so the Gabba have obviously done a lot of favours in the Queensland government to the AFL. Do you think this is the right call to have the grand final there?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I often have an opinion on something when I first hear it, and then it might differ a bit reading other people's opinions and stuff like that. Not saying I chop and change, but I'll happily admit when I don't take points into consideration to start with. There was a lot of things saying, you know, they say footy this year, so they deserve it. That's sort of their only argument, I would say, because for mine, to be honest, I think when you look at Perth as a state, they're a footballing state, so that's a big tick. They've literally just finished building a stadium to suit this type of scenario, not a COVID scenario, but to hold 70K, like they have a light show, for goodness sake. And it's
so
and it's
cool over there.
Yeah,
so cool.
The spectacle just watching on television is awesome. So, I think Optus Stadium would have been the number one pick for mine. But look, I actually haven't read into the reasoning. Did the AFL come out and actually say why it was chosen?
I don't know in particular to the whys. I think that, it obviously has a lot to do with all the work that Queensland have done and, you know, like everyone, I guess, involved in footy up in the northern states and in the hospitality and all that sort of stuff. So there is a little bit of that giving back, because I don't think it would be the best financial option to the AFL, which I guess is a consideration to during these times. They should just be making the best financial decision. But, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that goes on that we don't know about and aren't privy to. But I just I sort of thought Adelaide Oval would have been mine, just purely based on, they've still done a lot for footy as well this year and whatever. But as you talk about, you know, that real sort of rusted on footy state, I think that venue, I think you've seen the AFLW Grand Finals, that venue really lights up, like it really, and I mean, I'm sure as Optus Stadium does, you know, with the full house, but just get the feeling like if they could have taken it, yeah. Like, you know, you see Port Adelaide games and Adelaide games when Adelaide were good, although they did win. Like, you see those sort of games and you think, yeah, I think that night under lights, South Australia, I think it would be, that probably would have been my preferred option. But as we sort of said, there's a lot that goes into it. But what was interesting out of the deal, right, is that in return for giving up the game, the MCG, who are never going to host it this year because Melbourne and Victoria are still...
Did people think that they were going to? Like, did Victorians actually still were hanging on to that?
Well, like, I don't know, but, like, it's like the MCC or the MCG, whoever was doing the negotiations, went in and said, well, we're not going to give it to you for free. As if they couldn't have had a seat at the table, but clearly they did, because... Sam McClure tweeted that it's understood in return the MCG grand final deal is extended to 2058. So somehow they've managed to tack a few more years onto one of the most ridiculous deals in sport.
So that was to give it up for this season, they get...
Yep. So it's legitimately been like a trade table, like bargaining. They also get to host two extra games. Sorry, not two. They also get to host extra games in 2021. And Victoria will host two of the next three drafts. So whoever's been bargaining for Victoria or Melbourne or the MCG in that little deal has just absolutely struck gold.
You'd hate listening to this podcast if you lived in another state. Like, Victoria don't do themselves any favours with this sort of nonsense, do they? Like, in terms of, it's a national competition. But we seem to just win everything.
Yeah, I mean, possession's 9/10 of the law, I guess, and we've got all the teams.
I want to know, though, what the alternative was. So they're at the trade table and the MCC and the MCG are saying, all right, if we give it up this season, we get the extra tacked on. What if the AFL just said no? Because the grand final is not happening at the MCG. That's something that is just 100% true.
I guess, though.
Can they just boycott you guys? Well, contractually, if you played anywhere without our permission, does that mean they can just sue for a lot of money?
I would suggest so, yeah.
Yeah.
There would be a lot of, like, legal red tape around that they would. And then, I mean, I guess Victoria could still host it, sense that there would just be nobody allowed to be there. So they would have had to have been appeased, but on a common sense level, you just sort of go, well, look, we can't possibly host this. So, but they've done well. They've been shrewd in their attempts to hang on to it. So,
because at the end of the day, come 2058, and hopefully the Bombers have won a final by then, I think that what they've done themselves favours in is, because that argument keeps coming up year after year, is that, should we share the load? By 2058, that will be more than an argument. I think it's going to be inevitable that for whatever happens, that it will be at a different venue. So what they've done there is also guaranteed themselves to, if they have to give it up, then they will get rewarded for it year on end.
Yeah, I think that, this year the way fixtures and stuff have worked, it will change the way the game is played and the way it's fixtured and the way that it's thought of and how they construct their seasons and stuff. And I genuinely wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people didn't enjoy the grand final not being in Melbourne. I think that, while they've got the deal, and I can't see the MCG, for whatever reason, they've got that deal and it's going to, it will stand the test of time. And in 38 years when it expires, who knows what it'll look like and if they're selling it off in the meantime, whatever, and it'll come up every year. But I think that, Brisbane, wouldn't have been my first choice venue, but I think that a lot of people are going to realise that it's not the be-all and end-all if it's not here in Victoria, and it's going to... And it might make it easier. It might make it a better day, And I'm sure that there's a whole lot of things that go into it, like, your tourism and, like the traders and all those sorts of things. So there is a major, bigger picture than just a game of football. But I reckon that, it could be one of the all-time great days on October 24, the Cox Plate afternoon into the AFL night grand final in a different state. It could be a great day to catch up with your mates or your family or something and just enjoy yourself. So,
If you were a betting man, Jake, how many numbers would be tuning to Channel 7 throughout that day?
Oh, gee, they've got it. They're going to absolutely dominate that. I reckon there'll be a lot of cross promotion. There'll be a lot of, where's Bruce McAvaney? Is he at the races? He might not be able to be at the races, but, there'll be a lot of cross promotion there that will make Channel 7 an absolute mint.
What's your hot tip? Where will Bruce McAvaney be on grand final day?
Well, I think he might stay in South Australia because that's where he's been calling from. But I guess it depends how many finals are played in Queensland, because they might send them up and quarantine them maybe if that's still required. But it's still a long way away, about 6-8 weeks, 8 weeks away from the 24th of October. So we know with COVID, the landscape can change pretty quickly. So hopefully for the better, we can get the best callers up there. I did see an article, speaking of Bruce McAvaney, news.com.au picking up pieces that are written on Reddit by anonymous people bagging people about their job.
Did you actually read the Reddit article quote?
I did read it. And the thing is that it makes valid points and it's pretty funny, the rhetorical questions and all that sort of stuff and the broadcast element, what it adds. But I just don't think we can be picking up anonymous articles.
It's certainly dangerous, isn't it, where we just put that in an actual newsworthy article. Although, that bar's pretty low anyway, right? Now, help it.
It is, usually when, there's a silly article that gets written or, comments made, they can be attributed to a person. Like, this is just Yeah, and it's almost a similar vein to, you know, the Fox Footy promo of Cale Hooker. You know, it's his 200th game and he's copped a blooper reel as his thank you package sort of thing. And it's just like, there's got to be some sort of planning, isn't there? Like, I mean, you shouldn't be able to, but it can't be a new article, can't be an opinion piece for someone who's not going to put their name to it. Like, and that's no knock on the Reddit user. That's the fact that news.com are now picking up opinion pieces from there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like, and Cale Hooker, you know, cops a pretty ordinary package of him chasing Buddy Franklin and dropping marks.
Very ordinary.
Taking on him. It's just, I don't know. I mean, you see a lot of stuff on social media from people, you know, talking about protecting, you know, like people and what they're, you know, like their headspace and all these sorts of things. And then, I don't know, like, I'm not saying people are immune to criticism, but if you're going to criticise...
But when it's your 200th game...
Yeah, it's like, happy birthday, by the way. Here's all the times you're a dickhead. Like, it just doesn't... I don't know. It just didn't sit well. And I mean, you know me, I'm not a major Essendon. I'm not a pro Essendon man. But, it might shock you. I saw that and I just sort of thought, oh, I don't like that. And then I wasn't sure if I was just being a bit precious. But then, Twitter...
Yeah,
definitely solidified that.
And didn't they? I thought Nathan Buckley went into bat, which I thought was really good, and he just keeps getting, he just keeps going up and up a notch in my books. I think Nathan Buckley is just a real classy stand-up human being nowadays. I hope that he never gets a flag, but that's no knock on him as a person. But yeah, when I saw it, I missed the pre-game of the footy, and also wasn't watching at halftime. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, they've probably already done his package, or they're going to do it at halftime. And then when I find out, it wasn't until this morning I looked into Twitter and I was just like, oh no, that was all there was. The only highlights in his 200 games was chasing Buddy down a wing and getting five kicked on him by Jonathan Brown in his third game.
And he's kicked like game winning goals for us in the
four times,
like,
I'm pretty sure. Like, it's I don't know if I know they had some sort of, you know, half-hearted apology about it, which was like, you know, we misread it and we thought
it was half-hearted. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, it was so half-hearted. It was we misread that. We thought it might have been. Did they think it was going to be a funny spin? Because you're Fox Footy, you're not the front bar. Like, if ESPN did this for you know, I'm not saying Cale Hooker is a legend of the game, but 200 game is a very good milestone. If ESPN did that for an NBA basketballer who was just some sort of similar milestone, I don't think that they would be doing that. I don't know. Like,
it's a bizarre thought process. I mean, you know, people can make mistakes and stuff, but like, you would think that, you know, Fox Footy do some incredible promos and some stuff they do. They've sort of bought, I think, the AFL broadcast a lot closer to what we see in the NBA and the NFL, and, you know, like, and there is people who criticise that, but bringing the broadcast into modern day and like the war room and all that sort of stuff, they do very analytical, and it's a lot better than what we see on Channel 7. But I just, it was just a huge, huge swing and a miss.
It was a big miss, wasn't it?
I've actually got one for you, Ben. I want to revive an old segment of yours. Well, maybe.
You want to half revive it, half make it into your own thing? No.
I'm bringing back the Cane Corns of the Week.
Love it.
And it has to go to Cane Corns.
Well, you wouldn't bring it back otherwise, would you?
And we've spoken about Cane on this show at length. You know, you had a real problem with him early days and, you know, sort of really buying into getting angry about Cane, and that's sort of his shtick. And I think he's sort of like, he has sort of simmered a little bit, probably because he's been able to just bash the Adelaide Crows and no one really cares.
He does.
But he said on Footy Classified on Monday night, must have been, that Patrick Cripps wasn't in the best 12 midfielders in the game, and that he wouldn't take him. And he listed a whole lot of people that he would take ahead of Patrick Cripps. And Cripps has had a bit of an off year, and he's obviously sore and he doesn't kick well for goal. But I saw that and I just thought, like, it is the most deliberately provocative thing I've ever heard. And obviously I've bitten to it, and I'm sure that every other Carlton person on Twitter would have gone at him. But the man that finished like third in the Brownlow last year, he's 24, 25 years old, leading his club out of the doldrums, being their only physical player. And, you know,
Let me guess, it's because he can't get goals. Is that what it was?
Well, he then compared his numbers to Bailey Smith from the Bulldogs, who's playing as a fifth or sixth midfielder.
Yeah.
As you know, like, and And even Hutchie sort of said, well, they're two completely different players. Like, you can't compare that, whatever. And he said, oh, you know, but the numbers stack up, this, that, the other. And it was just like, this is just, this is madness. Like, utter madness.
When you said, I know you said earlier that, like, I used to get sucked in and all that sort of jazz. And I did a little bit, but it was more, I like to look at things like, from a, it's not necessarily like, oh, Kane Corns has said this. The way I try and look at things is like, what is Kane Corns the person trying to achieve out of what he's doing? And it is very, he's literally taken a leaf out of Trump's book, and it's just deliberately provocative. And it's basically, I don't think he believes a lot of the things he says. And my major issue with him at the time when I thought of the segment was that he was just coming into the media, and he was getting a name for himself for being that sort of that poke the bear sort of media, well, I won't say journalist, reporter. But those, my major issue with that is that it's a long game. He doesn't do himself favors for his longevity. So yes, he may get, you know, famous in the football world quite quickly for these sort of takes, but I don't think we'll hear from him in a decade's time. I think he won't have a job in that realm by then, because it's just, people just get over it. It's just like, okay, we just know what you're doing now, and that's, it doesn't work.
Yeah,
he paints himself into a corner. He's that guy. Kane's that guy. So when he does have a good point, everyone has to go, oh, actually, look, I do agree with Kane on this this time around, but like, that's what people say to things when he actually does make sense. So it's just like, the fact people say that about you is not a very positive thing.
I just think that he's got that, you know, like the niche sort of, he's happy to sort of be the bad guy of, you know, like, and, but I think his stuff would still rate really well, you know, like, and you know, the Croc Media, but, you know, Hutchie and all that, they would love that because he's on SEN Radio, you know, like in Adelaide and all that sort of thing, and then beams into Melbourne and Sunday
Footy
Show.
But my point is,
it won't
hold up for a long time. And and even Hutchie will get rid of whoever he wants to get rid of if it's not working. And once it stops working for Kane, which it will stop working, he'll be the first to go.
It'll be interesting. We can certainly disagree, because I think that he's carved a little niche for himself. And I just think that, you know, there's some things that you know, and I think that he has matured and changed a little bit in his approach, but there's things that saying you wouldn't pick that, like, you imagine being in an AFL world now where they delist all players and say, right, you can choose from anyone in the comp. What number do you think Patrick Cripps is going off the top of your head?
Highest five.
I would suggest. Oh well, I mean, I probably had him seven or eight in my head for that. But yeah, like, I mean, it's just it's remarkable. But it doesn't matter because I watched the clip that he said it on. I watched it in person, so I've already fallen into the trap. But
you've fallen into it.
I've fallen hard, Ben. We have got a big show. We've got a massive game to talk about coming up on Friday night. We've got another special guest. So I reckon we jump into the rest of it and get some of these people involved.
The Magoos.
Benny, another very special guest on the Magoos. Now, we've had a couple. We're starting to gain a little bit of street cred, I reckon, mate. And I'm not sure they come any bigger than our next guest. He's got a really cool story to tell, and we're absolutely pumped to have him on the show. And that is Braden Shaw. Braden, welcome to the Magoos.
Thanks for having me, lads.
A little bit of footy royalty in the house now, which is always nice. And while there are things to discuss that are currently happening, we want to go back to the early 2000s when you were, of course, drafted to Collingwood with the famous Shaw surname. Can you take us back to what that was like, the pressure, the excitement, all those things for a young bloke?
Long time ago there, mate. You're testing me out a bit. But, I was obviously, growing up, been an avid Collingwood supporter, obviously, with the family and obviously with Dad playing a hell of a lot of games down the club and brought up down the club and was lucky enough to get drafted the same year as my cousin Heath under the father-son role. So it was exciting. I was obviously very excited to go to a club that I've grown up at and absolutely loved. As for anyone getting drafted, it was probably a little bit daunting as well. I was wrapped, absolutely wrapped to go to a club that I knew. I was very comfortable going there, to be honest. I knew everyone down there, or most of the players. Myself and Heath were actually probably fortunate enough that we were training there probably from the age of about 15, 16 anyway, in the hope that we were going to get drafted, obviously, under the father-son rule. And then we knew most of the guys and how they operated and and whatnot anyway. So it was exciting times. But yeah, my stay there was pretty short lived. Although my cousin's there, he's still rolling around. Don't know how with that running style, but
he's still
rolling around. He's an excellent. So he's what a career. But and I love watching him do what he does. And you know, my eldest son, he's one of the biggest GWS supporters you'll ever see, because he just sends down free gear to him all the time. So he's had no say, and but he just absolutely loves GWS, and we chat regularly. And also now watching Reece do his thing at North, he's, you know, it's doing a pretty tough at the moment, but we'll support him no matter what as well.
That's awesome. With obviously getting drafted is one sort of type of feeling, but what was it like training? You said training from 15, 16. Like, yeah, as a 15-year-old kid, like, what was that like when you first rolled in?
I remember vividly going there, and I mean, he's caught the train there together, and I remember going down there, and then we were at Victoria Park still, so in the old club rooms and Adam Vic Park, which I'd obviously grown up being at every week, so I love the ground. I remember walking in, and then, you know, being blokes like Anthony Rocker, I would have weighed about 65 kilos ringing wet, and then Anthony Rocker strolls past you at a big 120, 125, and you're going, there's no way known I'm going to be able to go up against blokes like this. But, you know, they were all so welcoming, and, you know, we were just kids, and, you know, being able to go out there and train with the likes of Bucks and Paul Lecuria, you know, I really looked up to blokes like Brody Hollins and Scotty Burns, and just seeing the way these guys go about their footy and how hard they train and the work ethic that they have was just invaluable as a young fella going up. And then we took a lot away. It was one day a week basically from around about 15 or 16 until the day we got obviously drafted. So that made us feel a hell of a lot more comfortable than when we actually, when our names got read out and we were there full time. So it was great fun, really good fun.
So when you were leaving Collingwood, always sort of interested in this, we've spoken to Dil Buckley about like plan Bs after footy and stuff. And obviously back in those days, there wasn't sort of as much as there is now for education, all those sort of things from the AFLPA. What did you have anything to fall back on? Had you sort of planned for life outside of footy at all at that stage?
No, I didn't. I had absolutely nothing, to be honest. And I remember my dad saying when I was at school, I went to school for the social side of things in the first place, not very academic. And, you know, dad said, you should have done a trade. And I said, there's no way, no, I'm going to do a trade. Why would I do that? And I wish I did, to be honest. But lo and behold, in the end of, I went to a company, John's Lynn Group, and I was there for about 11 years after I finished footy, and which is a building known for its insurance building, but I did some commercial building there. And now I'm actually a work health safety manager for Simmons Homes. So the building industry kind of sucked me in, and I've been there since. So it's been around about 15 years now. But no, I had nothing to fall back on. I had to go back to, went to school, went back and did a few certificates and diploma. So it was pretty scary, to be honest. And I was obviously extremely upset at getting delisted. And but those things happen. That's football. I had to move on pretty quickly and move on with my life and move on with that next phase. You know, football, pretty fickle industry. You know, you either make it or you don't. And unfortunately, you know, a couple of injuries derailed me a little bit. Probably saying that, I probably didn't have a good enough work ethic as well, I think, in the 2 years that I was there, which didn't help. But it made me learn a hell of a lot, and it made me grow up really, really fast. I think I was a pretty immature 19-year-old, and that made me grow up extremely quick to see what it was like in the real world. And I wouldn't change a thing, to be honest with you. I would have loved to have played just that one game. I think it just would have been magic to say, yeah, to be able to play that one game for the club that your dad represented so many times, and your uncles and your cousins. But saying that, I'm extremely grateful for the career that I had after that as well. And to be honest, I love local footy. I love it. I've been involved now for 16 years or whatever it is, 15, 16 years. And, just having that, being able to play with your best mates was just something I completely cherish under and now at Hurstbridge.
So where did footy take you straight after you left Collingwood? You talk about the impact local footy had. Where did your footy journey go after you left the Pies?
As soon as I got delisted, I did a pre-season down at Melbourne, which obviously didn't work out. And then straight after that, I went down to Port Melbourne. I played at Port Melbourne for 2 years. I really enjoyed going down to Port Melbourne. If I had my time again, to be completely honest, I probably wouldn't have gone there. I would have gone and played local footy straight away. I don't like the whole VFL system, to be completely honest. I just didn't enjoy it. It was a hell of a lot of time and effort. And to be honest, yeah, I would have much rather gone and played local footy with my extremely good friendship group, which I did. I went to Bundoora after Port. If I had my time over again, I probably would have gone straight to Bundoora. But saying that, I made some extremely good friends from the Port Melbourne team, and they were, Port Melbourne aren't aligned or weren't aligned with anyone as well, so it did have that kind of local feel to it. But the whole VFL thing just wasn't for me in the end. So as soon as I finished there, I went to Bundoora, which I played obviously most of my local footy.
What do you find that the sort of, you know, the biggest flaw with that VFL system is? Because you often do hear about a lot of guys wish they just did play the local footy, and obviously money aside, you can make some money playing locally. Is it just what is it? Do you think that it is that is?
I think it's obviously a lot different now to what it was back then. When we were playing, there was a hell of a lot of teams apart from probably Port Melbourne that were aligned. So when I was at Collingwood, we were aligned with Williamstown, and that alignment was extremely difficult at times because you had blokes at these clubs that were there, you know, full time at Williamstown and you know, Springvale or whatever it's Casey now, I think it was Springvale back then. Coming in and out of those teams was extremely difficult. You know, some of them you'd run around on the weekends and you didn't really know them that well. They tried their best to kind of make it work, but it's just, yeah, it wasn't a team feeling, and that's what I missed. I love playing, being a part of a team and having that team environment. And then, you know, we're obviously, yeah, Collingwood was aligned with Williamstown. That drive over the West Gate to go to Williamstown some nights to train was just horrific. It was pretty poor. It was, you know, you've seen some of the games being played in Williamstown where the ball gets kicked out from full back and it goes straight back over their head into the goalpost. Well, I've been training at some of those nights out there and it was exactly the same. And it just wasn't for me. It wasn't fun. I'd rather be out with my mates and have a good time. They were good people, great people, like most football clubs have, but I think that's what, you know, a lot of blokes didn't like, to be honest with you.
Talk about gale force winds. Preston City Oval is a place where you've done some of your very best work. Obviously, as two boys from the Don Valley, as myself and Ben are, and most of our listeners are as well, because they sort of have to because we make them listen. More than happy to chat some of the Northern Footy League stuff with you. Going to Bundoora, what was the biggest difference you found from that elite system coming back to local level? And Bundoora was sort of the first club, I guess, for mine that I was sort of 19s in 2010, 2011 and sort of realised like how good those clubs were. And at Greensboro, you know, sort of looking at how we can get to there. What sort of things were you able to take to Bundoora that they didn't have, and what things were you sort of able to leave behind that could make Bundoora better too?
Yeah, look, it's a tough one. When I went to Bundoora, they'd been in a bit of a midst of a grand final losing streak, I guess, to that powerhouse Heidelberg side that just annihilated everyone. So when I went there, they were successful without having the ultimate, to be honest. They didn't have those cups to show for all the hard work that they had done. So I think they just lacked a little bit of, not too much, maybe a little bit of leadership and hard-nosed leadership. And that's where my second year, Phil Malan came in. Now, Phil Malan's been around Traps for a long time and has coached some significant sides and obviously played at the highest level. And I think just his hardness approach, like we did a pre-season, I remember his first year down there and most of his pre-seasons were some of the hardest I've ever done. You know, he was strict, but he was also a player's coach as well and extremely honest. And I've always been the type of person, I think I get this from my dad, I don't bullshit. I love brutal honesty. If you can't handle that brutal honesty, you know, it's a bit of bad luck. But saying that now it's one thing I did learn going down to Bundoora was, you know, a lot of players are different and you've got to be able to speak to players in certain ways to get the most out of them as well. So some players will take a massive rev up and they'll be okay. And other players, you've got to talk a bit calmer, a bit nicer to them and you'll get the best out of them. But, yeah, that was the big, I'll be honest, going down to Bundoora, there wasn't much difference, I think, between the level of football there, between the top sides there and the top sides in the VFL. I have no doubt that Heidelberg side could have beaten most VFL sides, without doubt. easily. And the Bundura side that I had from about 2011 to 2013, exactly the same, without a doubt. We would have beaten a heap of VFL stuff.
Yeah, you touched on sort of the at local level, the different players, you know, they learn differently and, you know, different personalities, that sort of thing. Obviously in fairly, well, not too recent years, but the like head coaches in the AFL system, you see that their emotional intelligence just getting better and better over the years. Do you find that that has filtered through now to local leagues and it's not that sort of, you know, just pushed into the limit sort of thing? It's actually be smarter.
Absolutely. It's 100% it's changed. It's completely changed. Coaches are more player managers now. And yeah. You have your, you know, you've got your line coaches, like most coaches like at Hurstbridge, and I'm an assistant coach, but I also look after the midfield. We've got Ben Shelton who looks after the backs and Cameron Cloak who looks after the forwards, you know. So a lot of the time at training, we spend with them going over that craft. And then it's up to Jared Tilley, who's the head coach, basically to get around to each player. You know, obviously mental health is a massive thing at the moment, making sure these young guys are going okay, because they're not only dealing with football, they're dealing, you know, with pressures in their job, pressures from home. There's a hell of a lot going on at the moment, especially in these times that we're going through, you know, constant phone calls and just checking in and making sure they're okay. I think that's what a main, especially a head coach's role is now these days, whereas compared to before, we didn't really have that. The head coach was the head coach and what he said went, and, you know, he looked after everything else apart from that. But clubs have changed, local footy's changed. It's gotten a hell of a lot more modern. Local footy compared to when I first started, it's like a business. They run like a business now. So, you know, there's a hell of a lot of money in local footy that gets put into it, and also a hell of a lot of work from people behind the scenes. But definitely the coaching side of things completely changed. They're player managers now. They're not coaches.
So we talk about your decorated career. It sort of came to a bit of an abrupt end against Greensboro one day, and it was pretty frightening scenes, I think, just to even be there and to sort of be witnessing the day. Can you sort of take us back to how it all came to an end for you, and then the days and weeks after that incident?
Yeah, so over my career, I've been knocked out, I would say, in excess of 10 to 15 times. I got diagnosed with epilepsy for, I'd say, about 7 or 8 years ago now. I had a head knock at Bundura one time, and then, yeah, I started seizing, and I thought it's time to go get checked and see what's going on with this. And I've had a couple of, obviously, seizures outside of that. But my form of epilepsy is basically brought on by sleep deprivation, concussion, you know, late nights, too much alcohol, that sort of thing. I've had a few, and obviously, yeah, it's stuffed around with me a fair bit and taken me to some pretty dark places, to be honest. But the Greensboro one was basically the last straw. I got knocked out in a pretty innocuous sort of incident as well. Was going in for a mark and copped from the video. I don't remember obviously too much of the incident, but from the video, copped a hip from a teammate to the side of the head and hit the deck, and then was out for a few minutes, and then woke up on the ground, and then went into a seizure, an epileptic on the ground. So it was, it just wasn't nice. I like I said, I've got three young kids now, like, 7, 5, and 3, and I don't think they were all there. I think, I don't know if my eldest was there. I think a couple of them were there, and obviously my wife.
For them to see that, like, my wife doesn't need to be put through any more of that, let alone my kids seeing that, to be honest. And also the main thing is just to make sure that, you know, I want to be able to go watch my kid play and be able to have a kick out in the front yard and in your backyard and down the back, down the footy ground. You know, it's, I don't want my head to turn into mush. And I've done everything I possibly can in my footy career. You know, I won a couple of flags and played with some amazing people. So that was enough. That was enough. I didn't want to put my body through any more of that. Do I miss it? 100% absolutely I do. And if I could still play, I'd still be out there. I look at someone like Bob McKeenan, and who's at Hurstbridge now, who I just idolise. And
everyone loves playing footy. But saying that, I'm more than content in what I've done in my career.
Yeah, awesome. How do you find with the head stuff and the epilepsy and that sort of thing outside of football? How do you handle that, your sort of day to day?
day-to-day basis at the moment is I take medication every single day for my epilepsy, so it's just a couple of tablets every day. That controls it pretty well, as long as I'm doing all the right things to not set off, you know, set off alarm bells. So,
yeah.
Like I said to you before, try and sleep as much as I can at night and not stay up too late. If I take that risk away of, I guess, of footy, which is, you know, the head knocks and my type of style of play is, you know, bum up and head down and burrow in the packs and try and get the ball out. I'm not quick enough to run around on the outside, so I've got to go in and get it myself. If I take that risk away of footy, then the risk of me having that seizure is greatly diminished. So I try and look after it that way and just try and, you know, obviously doing this run at the moment, that's been something completely different and just trying to get myself as healthy as possible. After it happened, though, was probably the biggest difference. I've had head knocks before and a week later, 2 days later, I've been absolutely fine and I felt like I could play and no dramas, no issues, no after effects. Whereas this took me 12 months and, like I said, took me to some seriously, seriously dark places. It stuffed up with my personality. It wrecked, nearly wrecked relationships. You know, it took a toll on my wife in regards to how she saw how I was. Headaches, constant massive headaches, which just killed me. It took a long time to recover, and that solidified my decision to stop playing. There was absolutely no way I could keep playing with the condition that I was in. So to pull the pin was the easiest decision for me to make. To be honest.
Incredible. And then so after all that, in 2020, you start this, you know, Team Kill Cancer Marathon initiative. You alluded to the run there, and I think what we're sitting at over $25,000 raised at the moment. Do you want to talk about what you're doing, why you're doing it, and when you'll be doing it as well, fingers crossed?
Yeah, so it's, myself and one of my best mates who I've grown up with, Ben Smith, his name is. Ben's mum passed away, sadly, to a brain tumour when we were younger. And we've always spoken about, if it's just between us, that we wanted to do a marathon. We wanted to do a marathon. We wanted to complete it. And I've always gone, yeah, no dramas, we'll do it. And footy has always taken over, and I've never had the opportunity or chance to be able to do it. And then obviously what happened, and then we spoke about it, and I said, rightio, it's time to go. Let's get this done. Otherwise, I'm going to get too old and too slow, and there's absolutely no way I'll be doing it. So we decided to do the marathon, and we thought, why not do it for a great charity and try and make some money along the way. So I've been introduced to Team Kill Cancer, TKC, about 3 or 4 years ago. Team Kill Cancer has been around since 2013, around about. There was an initiative brought in by a bloke named Nathan Williams with his wife, Kath, and some friends as well. Nathan's mum passed away with cancer in 2013, and they wanted to do something basically in memory of her, and also to help out people in our local Don Valley community, and not only Don Valley, but our local community who are going through tough times in regards to cancer. So what they do is they've got a great membership base, and these people pay memberships which you can get for as less as $25, and then if you become a member of TKC, you can nominate someone that you know who's going through, who might be them going through cancer, it might be a family member who's going through cancer, a friend of a friend, and you can nominate them for a gift. That gift can be anywhere from, you know, paying for their shopping for the week or for a few weeks to going on a holiday somewhere for over a weekend or something like that. So it's a great initiative. It's the first kind of charity I guess I've been involved in ever in my life, and it just took to me to see a real every single dollar that goes to charity goes to those people. These guys do everything for free. Nathan has organised all of this for free, and Mark, you know, that every single dollar non-for-profit organisation, all the money goes to Team Kill Cancer and goes to people that are affected by cancer. So we decided to do this marathon. It was going to be the Melbourne Marathon, but we decided to make it our own, and we're going to run from Kinglake West up at the memorial there. Up on the mountain, we're going to go down the mountain, not up, because I wouldn't make it up. down the mountain, all the way to through Whittlesea, through Doreen all the way to through Hurstbridge and end up at the new tram cafe that's getting constructed at the moment by custom built in Diamond Creek. So it's going to be an absolute ripper run. Unfortunately, COVID's kind of stuffed us up a bit. It was going to be in 2 weeks on September the 14th that we had organised it for, or Sunday the September the 13th. I can't remember which one of those dates it is. But it was on that date. We've had to postpone it, obviously, with COVID at the moment. Hopefully, Dan Andrews gives us some good news this following this Sunday coming up that we can book in a new date and get it done. Because if I have to train any more for this, I'm to be honest. But it's been good. It's been worth it. Like you said, we've raised over $25,000 through the generosity of a lot of local community members and businesses who have jumped on board. And it's just been a tremendous response, and we can't thank them enough for jumping on.
Awesome. And you guys, where can we find you guys? Just online, on socials, or?
Yeah. So we're on Instagram. So TKC are on Instagram. So they're at their own Instagram site. They're also on Facebook as well. So Team Kill Cancer. Can also hop onto the website, which is www.teamkillcancer.com.au, and you can hop on there and you can donate to there. You'll have the first story that pops up is mine and Ben's story and why we're doing this. So you can click on a button just after our story and donate to there if you like. If not, I'm more than happy to leave my details if anyone wants to get a hold and hop on. And you can also get these great TKC beanies that we've just got our hands on. We actually sold out. We had to order another couple of hundred because they've just gone crazy. But now with the fine weather, we might have to get on the caps and the singlets and stuff like that, guys. But any which way anyone wants to help is more than appreciated. We're not asking for anything. People are just jumping on and helping us guys out and helping the team out. So can't thank you guys enough for having us on and having a bit of a chat about it as well.
Yeah, we'll make sure that we tag your personal page for B&B for TKC as well in all our stuff as well, so people can go on there and see some of the awesome local businesses and some of the work you're doing. My question's around the training. Obviously, you know, pre-seasons and stuff are hard enough, and you talk about some of the pre-seasons you did. Where does it compare to preparing for a marathon?
By far, this is the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life, without a doubt. I can't tell you how many. Myself and Ben have been training from about, I think I started in February, just to make sure that when we actually started out, we did a five-month program. When we started the five-month program, we were just running straight into something we've never seen before. So we started training a bit early. It's been absolutely brutal. I don't know how some people do it, to be honest. My body is just not made for running on concrete or running in general, to be honest. I've definitely got that sure waddle, and it's absolutely horrific on the feet and the ankles and the legs. But it's amazing what you can train your body to do, and not even train your body physically, but mentally, how you can train yourself. It's definitely shown me a hell of a lot, and I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to the challenge. Hopefully, I'm sure we'll get it done. We definitely will get it done. We have to crawl over the line. We will, but it's going to be a great day, and something that we'll remember, and I'm sure we'll be pretty emotional once we get to the finish line as well. So, yeah, there we go.
Fantastic. Well, as we said, thanks very, very much for all your time. And, I mean, you're just doing an amazing thing at the moment. To share your story as well on here is greatly appreciated. We'll make sure that we pump it up all over the Magoo social so everyone can go along, learn a little bit more, and hopefully donate if you can as well to what's an incredible initiative. So good luck for the run. Whenever it takes place, make sure that we're following you along. We wish you luck with it all. Good luck with everything, and thanks again for joining the Magoos, Braden.
Yes, fellas. Thanks for having me.
The Magoos.
How clever is this, by the way? More of my 8-year-old nephew. They had to write some sort of little thing for school from an object's point of view. It's actually quite clever. He goes, "I don't know what I've done. Firstly, I was the hardest working member in the family. I used to drive to basketball and footy, school kinder, and now I've just been here from the start of the year. So now..."
Yeah. Yeah, so you're laughing already. This is fantastic.
So now I think I did something wrong, and every day I just sit around in the garage so sad. Something... It keeps going. Sometimes my family come and I think they're going to hop in me, but they actually walk past me, grab their bikes and shut the garage door behind them. And it finishes off with this: when did bikes become so popular? Little philosopher on her hands.
Give that man the $10,000.
The Magoos.
Benny, time for my favourite segment on the Magoos, when we get two members of our community in to chat about their upcoming rivalry match, the conference call game of the week this week. There's so much footy going on, we didn't really know where to look, but it's going to be the round 15 clash, or which closes round 15 on a Friday, as strange as that still is to say, and it's Brisbane versus Collingwood at the Gabba. Probably doesn't come much bigger. It's third versus sixth. The Pies are rising, and the Lions need to try and find a little bit of form. We've got regular Magoos contributor Daniel, the Brisbane fanatic, joining us again. Dan, welcome back.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me.
And first-time Magoos contributor, Harley, a Manic Pies man, joining the show. Harley, welcome.
Thanks, boys. Proud to be part of it.
So, Daniel, we'll start with you, all right?
Go on, Jack. Go on. Give me your worst, mate.
The grand final's just been announced at the Gabba. I'm trying to work out a way now how Brisbane don't win it.
This is the issue.
Too. Me too.
This is the issue. Jake, why do you have me on if you're just going to try and make it a war against you and I don't understand why you do it. Everyone's already doing it. Everyone's jumping on us saying it's theirs to lose. We're forgetting this is a team that's not in form and lost two home finals last year. What are we talking about?
Well, I don't think you win a final. I'm just happy to heap it on.
I know
because
you are.
You'll never ever get a better chance to win the grand final with
probably
this group
right, yeah.
than this year.
Oh, I don't agree with that.
That's okay. Why don't you?
I want you to elaborate. Is it?
Yeah.
Well, majority of the list and majority of the talent is under the age of 23. So I imagine they're only going to prosper into the better players. Imagine, assuming we keep them. I'll give you that. That's assuming we keep them.
Destination imagine, club, you'll keep them.
Yeah, I'm assuming anywhere. The next couple of years we're still going to be in a good window. This is still the same mob that in 2018 finished, second last, I think we were. So it's still early days in our development. So I'm not bloody, ruining us after this year. I'm not putting a line through us by any stretch. But I do agree that to play a grand final on the Gabba when you're a team that largely can't play at the G, which, by the way, I'm very glad we're playing Collingwood at the Gabba, not at the G. I do agree with you there. We haven't learned to play the G yet. So, yes, in that sense, you're right.
I think that's bang on too.
You're right.
Yeah, just take that sound bite and you'll be happy.
Yeah, you're right.
And Harley, the Pies are starting to find a bit of form. They rolled over Carlton pretty convincingly in that second half and things just look like they're starting to tick over pretty nicely, I reckon, for the Pies.
Yeah, I wouldn't say convincingly, but I thought the second half against North Melbourne, we started to lift our skills and play a bit more free-flowing footy, and then we eventually broke the baggers on Sunday, which was nice.
Wasn't overly nice. We don't have to, What I've sort of started to feel a little bit with Collingwood, and I've had this conversation with a couple of Collingwood people, is that I feel like they're sort of like they're in that Richmond mould of like they're building and then they'll start to get players back and everything will be going really well at the right time. It's been met with some resistance from Collingwood supporters who just think they're not really that good. But I think that if this team can make the finals and they get Degoe, Howe, if Sidebottom comes back, there's a couple of more that I'm forgetting that are in their top couple of players back at the right time into a team that's playing pretty good footy. I think that they'll be the last team that people will want to play, like maybe Ben's Bombers who might slide into eighth.
Yeah. Hopefully we can secure some sort of home final or advantage or maybe play St Kilda or something like that in the first week of finals. They're out of form at the moment. Friday night will be a good test for us, I think. And then if we can put Sidebottom, Treloar, Degoe and Howe back into that team, you never know.
Yeah, are those guys actually far off too? I know Sidebottom's not injured, but the other guys?
I saw today Treloar's 1 to 2 weeks, Degoe's 1 to 2, and it said Howe's 2 to 3.
Wow, that is actually...
That'd be cherry ripe.
That is actually kind of scary now to think about that on paper.
You never know.
Lady Card's very close to your chest here at the moment, Harley, but let's focus in on Friday
absolutely.
Night.
Absolutely.
Friday night, we'll focus in on what needs to be done for these two teams. Dan, you mentioned that Brisbane were out of form. They look like a team that really needed the bye. Surely all they did over that time was practice their goal kicking.
Oh, God, I hope so. It's seriously, like, you and I have a lot of banter, Jake, but at the end of the day, they are concerning me at the moment with their goal kicking. It's literally the only thing you need to really do to make sure that you win a game, and we can't do it. And, yeah, I after seeing what we did against North, and then it's the pattern is concerning that it's able to go through the whole team, not just like one or two plays. It seems to just take over the whole team, and it goes back to that whole sort of inexperience and not like sort of lacking a bit of maturity. And it goes back to what I said about the young team. They are still pretty young, but as a fan and as a coach, I can only imagine Chris Fagan, you can't do anything. You can't change. You can't just fix it. So, and unfortunately we're at the pointy end of the year. So we've got 4 weeks to fix it up. And I'm hoping that starts on Friday night because it's a good opportunity to do it. I think Collingwood aren't obviously at their peak. And I think we've got a good opportunity to get the confidence up against a mob that is considered one of the best in the league when they are up and running.
Do we feel with goal kicking that a lot of clubs think that it's something that we can just fix in 4 weeks, or it's just sort of like all you got to do is kick it through those sticks? It's very simple. It's all between the ears. But it's, I think there's a lot more to it than that.
I think it's one of those things that it's easy to make that comment from the outside. So you even see those old players saying, you know, it's all between the eyes and shit. It's not that. It's not that simple, coach. And that's why you don't see Chris Fagan harping on it, because he knows the more you harp on it, the more it becomes a bigger thing. Like, it's not as simple as just remove it from your mind. Like, once it's in there, it's stuck. You can't get it out. So I don't know what you do. I imagine that's why you have sports psychologists. I just hope we got good ones.
Mm-hmm.
Whoever they use for Levi Casbolt, fly him up to Brisbane, because
Big
we
Sav,
need
I think, wasn't it? It was Big Sav Rocker, I think. There you
was go. That always, who it was.
There's always an ex goal kicker.
Well, we had Alistair Lynch working with Eric Hipwood in the preseason, and it's—I don't know if it's worked or not. So,
not to drag this about back to Essendon at all, but Joe Danaher, when the year he actually kicked quite a number of goals, he had Matty Lloyd helping him out, and then decided to give him the flick. I think he said, "Like, I think I'm right from here," and he's gone backwards since then. So, it's absolutely you need to have someone who can just always mentor you in that way. Some footballers, I think they might be above it. I don't know.
I think it's a generational thing too. Like, I think it's this weird thing where just blokes were more mentally tough back in the day. I think look at Paddy Cripps, right? Toughest bloke on the field, goes in for a set shot, and obviously it's in there. Like, one of the most skilled players in the comp. When players that are that good can't do it. Did you like how I did that, Jake, by the way? I just sort of played. Yeah, he's wrapped. He's wrapped. When players that good can't even do it, it says that it is mental toughness, and that's why blokes in the early 2000s were a lot better at it.
There you go.
That's my opinion.
That's a real deep dive into the psyche there.
The psychology, I like
it's the only line I can draw. That's the only thing that seems to make sense.
And Harley's sitting there thinking, you know, Collingwood are playing this Friday night. Like, we get over to me. I mean, they don't necessarily, you guys don't really have a big forward to start kicking them. But you'd actually go on, Jack.
Go on, Ben. No, go on. This will be better than one. You were going to talk about Mason Cox, weren't you?
I was going to say, you'd actually be pretty happy with his effort the last fortnight or so, Harley.
He kicks them straight. He's one bloke who does kick them straight, so. But, yeah, like you boys say, especially when you miss easy ones and then it goes down the other end, it just, as a supporter, just pisses you off endlessly.
What pisses me off a lot, sometimes there has to be, like, from the defence, there has to be, say, like, 15 very good disposals to get it into the 50 because defensive structures are so good. And then you have someone like, I don't know, like Joe Dano did it last night where he just sort of just leant back and blazed it away, or you get it a lot of the times where they blaze it away. It's like you're actually sort of disrespecting your teammates how hard they work to get it to you, and you're just, like, just having a quick shot.
Yeah. Definitely happens every week at Brisbane.
Yeah.
One bloke that is quite good at it, despite a bit of a strange technique, is Jaden Stevenson, who Carlton played back into form pretty nicely for your Hulls. I reckon he's such a linchpin for that team. Like, that forward line when they're up, I'm sort of sounding a little bit like a Collingwood fanboy here, but that is because I rate them when they're up and going. Like, you know, that forward line becomes very, very dangerous if Cox can be the one that straightens them up with Stevenson and Dacos and the like rolling around.
Yeah, I think Cox makes Stevenson and Josh Thomas and Will Hoskin-Elliott's job a lot easier and get it to ground, a bit more consistency and to drag a couple of people towards him. I think he opens it up a little bit, but yeah, hopefully he can get those jukes going and relive the 2018 prelim at some stage this year.
God, imagine just having one good game where everyone just says, and we just relive this one game every time.
He's the Mark McGough of this era.
That is not bad. We might have to use that, I think, Ben, in the promo.
We might have to.
The Mark McGough of this year. Right, lads, Friday night. Daniel, you can kick us off. Brisbane, by how much and why?
I reckon at the end of the day, Collingwood are still trying to get back to their best. So I reckon we should win by about 20 points. I just think Collingwood's forward line's really dangerous. You got Majacek, you got Stevenson, like you said, and obviously you got Cox, who's maybe played back into a bit of form. But I do think if there's one consistent thing with our team, it's our back line, and you've got Harris Andrews, all Australian form. I mean, you can't, if you just put him on Cox, you can't really say that Cox has any chance of beating him. And then you've got, obviously, Darcy Gardner that will go to Majacek, and then you've probably got Brandon Stasevic who will go over to Stevenson, who's been doing really good at sort of a lockdown role. And then our forward line, I just kind of think Darcy Moore is sort of solo at the moment to a large degree in terms of when it comes to taller forwards. And when we've got Big O, McStay and Hipwood, you know, if they do decide to kick straight, I don't know if Darcy Moore can be everywhere at once. So I'm thinking that we might have the wood over him in a few key positions around the ground.
Flag lines, that's what I'm hearing.
Am I right in saying you're only tipped him by 20 points and then gave us the fact that Collingwood might not touch the ball all night?
I said if we kick straight.
Yeah, that's the key.
Okay. And Harles, your thoughts on the Pies?
I'm hoping we can win by just a couple of goals. Maybe, hopefully they don't have their kicking boots on, and we've got enough tall defenders to lock down their big forwards, so don't worry about that. And it would be interesting to see what Greenwood does, whether he gets a roll or he should come straight back in for Maine, I think. So hopefully he can do a roll and knock Lucky Neal like he was doing a couple of years ago, and I enjoyed that lockdown role he played.
Yeah, well, gents, it's a huge game this Friday night, and as the season continues to get to the more pointy end, I'm sure that we'll be featuring these two teams a lot more, as there's plenty to play for those teams who are still in contention, so that must be nice.
Jake, just before we let the boys go as well, Harley, we actually had a bit of fan mail come in about yourself. They touched on that you might have wanted to speak a bit about your junior footy career and the way you might have snagged a couple of goals. Is there anything that you wanted to bring up in that regard?
A few of the boys just mentioned to me while I was going on the show, and then a couple others mentioned maybe it was the five I kicked in the under 16s prelim or the four the week after in the grand final. So.
Also, just 92 weeks is very good. But just on top of that, there was word that the word decoy got thrown around a little bit in the feedback. Is it true that in juniors down at the Eltham Football Club that the great Bontempelli may have been a decoy for yourself in the forward line?
I think that's a bit of mayo, so I'll put a bit of mayo on that, but. Yeah, I was once a fit young junior and I used to kick a couple of snaggers.
And Daniel, we don't want to leave you out of this too, because we played a little bit of footy together. I was going to say, for a man that would have kicked a few, I remember you kicking, I reckon you kicked one day down at Greensboro in the under-19s.
It was six. Very good team. Six. Jake, let's get it right. Yep.
Well, was it true on top of that as well, also fan mail, that after that six you may have gotten dropped the next week?
Yeah, I managed to get dropped the next week. I'm not sure what happened, but old BT down at Greensboro, he was far more up other forwards' asses than he was mine. And so I managed to kick six and then just get the flick. So Jake might know a little bit more about the intel there. He was quite, he was also up the coach's backside back in the day.
This is where this all stems from, I guess.
You know, sometimes you just have to play the political game. We're understanding that now, you know, during the pandemic and stuff, you've just got to pull the right rein at the right time, Daniel.
And I did not.
You kicked too many goals. So you're too good. Gents, thank you both very much for joining us, having a bit of banter on the Magoos this week. Good luck for this Friday night and for the rest of the season, and thanks for coming on board, and I'm sure that we'll speak to you both very soon.
Thanks, boys.
Been a pleasure.
The Magoos.
Bentley, another massive episode of the Magoos in the books. Thank you very much to Braden Shaw for joining us. And inspiring story, what he's doing at the moment with his mates for Team Kill Cancer. Obviously, as we do with all those sort of things, you know, go and get around at Magoos Community. Give them a follow on Instagram. Even those little things can go a long way. If you can donate, of course, if you can get around the run, hopefully on the day we'll be allowed to go down and have a little bit of a look as well, which would be good. So get around them. And the conference call, Ben. I'll tell you what, there's some big games of footy.
Well, I tell you what, Jake, and we're getting close to finals. I reckon we're due for maybe a ladder predictor coming up or who knows. Ooh. And Watch your space. People are loving the conference calls, though. Maybe we even during finals, just throwing it out there, we might even do like a condensed couple, do a couple of games.
Every final.
Just get the Magoos community really just involved and just getting on it.
It's a takeover. It's their show. So, I mean, we're only keeping it warm for them at the moment.
So, if you think your team's a red hot crack for playing finals, let us know because we're more than happy to talk to everyone the real passionate supporters about it.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I can only imagine because Carlton haven't really been in the finals race for a long time and a serious threat for even longer. But I assume that really brings out the nuff in people when finals and elimination are on the line. So, keep sliding into our DMs. We've actually had a few, which has been nice. So keep sliding into our DMs. Put the pressure on us to get you on the show because we want to hear from the Magoos community. I reckon that's us, Ben, for another cracking episode. As we said, a big thanks to Braden Shaw. Go and get around all his stuff. And while you're there, like, share, subscribe, all of our stuff too. I mean, it only makes sense. And enjoy all the footy on every night, Magoos community, and we will speak to you very, very soon.
Bye.
Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos.